Behold, I will make Jerusalem a cup of trembling unto all people round about, when they shall be in siege both against Judah and against Jerusalem. Are the days of Zechariah warned of upon us? Join Stephen Bannoun and host Bonnie Harvey for a discussion of Jerusalem, the Flashpoint.
Welcome to another edition of Flashpoint, where we'll be the spark that ignites the world. Sorry we've been remiss at not getting you new shows for the last couple of weeks, but we had a wonderful conference in Canby Grove with L.A. Marzulli, Stephen Bannoun, and Yana Bannoun. If you were there, oh, I just so enjoyed having you there. If you were not there, you missed something. What says you, Stephen?
I would have to agree. It was a very, very nice conference there. The people were just wonderful. And yes, Bonnie had been really engrossed in getting this thing together, bless her heart. So that has a lot to do, you know, why we just could not pull things together. And of course, being the conference is on the weekend too, and us traveling for it. So we apologize for that. But I think that some of the things that come out of it, once these things are posted, you guys will be blessed if you're able to see that as well, no doubt.
Indeed, indeed. Yeah, I'm still hopeful that we can get CDs out to people. Okay, you know, a lot's happening in the world, Stephen. It seems to be somebody hit the gas pedal on this, and it seems that, you know, the layers of the onion are being peeled off more rapidly and more rapidly. Let's start in Venezuela, in our own hemisphere. I know the U.S. government, according to Hal Turner, has repositioned two or three, maybe four, very expensive reconnaissance satellites. They, when they're launched, they have a very limited capacity for maneuvering, very little fuel to cut down on drag, and they used that fuel. And then once they're repositioned, then they have to go through hundreds of maneuvers to make certain that the satellites are in their proper orbit and they're in relation to the Earth so they can be effective in what they're told to do. And Hal Turner's conclusion is they are getting ready for a major action in South America, which brings up Venezuela. Stephen, tell us about Venezuela.
Well, one thing I can tell you is that I've known for some time, we've reported on Israeli News Live, that the U.S. and Israel both had special ops on the ground inside of Venezuela. This has mainly been in the behind the scenes, preparing for this coup to overthrow the nation. It's going to be another perfectly twin to Ukraine in some sorts, we might say. And of course, Maduro, as I don't want to paint him as some kind of angel by no means, but it is obvious that this president is fighting for his political life and fighting for his people. And that may be contrary to what a lot of people believe, but he's trying to stay into power. That being said,
and he probably knows that he's up against more than he can fight back at.
Well, you know, Bonnie, this is what makes it all interesting. He's right now sending propelled howitzers, self-propelled howitzers, the TS-19 and the MSTA-S to the Colombian border. And what's interesting is that as we watch this video footage that was provided by a friend of ours, Lorenzo, an Italian journalist, sent this to me, we watched this convoy of military equipment headed to the Colombian border. He must be anticipating an invasion from the Colombian side. And it was when President or Vice President Pence was announcing the support for the self-appointed President Juan Guaido, when he is announcing before a cheering crowd that he is the now new and swears himself in as the new president of Venezuela. And then all of the NATO allies are backing this guy here, including Colombia's president, comes out and says, we stand with Juan Guaido as the new president of Venezuela. Yet there's no vote. And I know that a lot of people, when we look at this, Bonnie, it's looked at from the aspect that Maduro is a bad guy. He's squandered all the country's resources, the money, and therefore the country is in a major dilemma. But what we don't pay attention to, or what we are so easily quick to forget about, is that the U.S. has been involved, and as well as Israel, unfortunately. I hate to, you know, it troubles me to bring my own people involved into this, but the facts are the facts. We can go back to 2014, and we can see where the Israelis and the United States worked with the Saudi kingdom in order to flood the market with cheap oil. And as a result, it went from $110 a barrel during that time all the way down to $28 a barrel. Now, they were doing this to basically to not just cripple Venezuela, but also to cripple other nations like Russia and any other nation that was competing for the oil market. So the Saudis actually went into debt in order to be able to do this. And of course, it just devastated the Venezuelan economy. And as a result, it caused the hyperinflation inside the country. And who's affected? The people are. You know, a government might be able to sustain these losses, especially if they're as rich as the Saudis are. And of course, you know, the Americans enjoy getting the cheaper gas anyway, because we never pay the amount of money for gas as all the other rest of the world does. So it just kind of shows. In fact, that in itself should tell us something, that our country is involved, unfortunately, in imperialism around the world. And you can't help but see it. I mean, we saw that General Wesley Clark talked about seven nations had to come down in 5 years. Of course, they're way off their goal time. But nonetheless, you know, there's only one left to go, and that's Iran. They've already taken care of the rest of those. You know, we have Iraq. We have Syria. Well, Lebanon is still yet to go. But that's fixing to happen, because I've been told clearly by people in the know in Israel that, yes, Lebanon, they're going to take down Lebanon. Maybe not per se the government, but Hezbollah when it comes to that. But nonetheless, if the government is not in cooperation with the New World Order scenario, then yes, they're going to take down that leader as well. But jumping back over here to Venezuela, Vice President Pence, he comes on there, and I mean, I hate to say it, but he sounded like a Jesuit. He really did. You know, he just comes on like an altar boy or something, you know, like, well, you know, we support Juan Guaido as the new president, and we're saying to Maduro, you need to peacefully just step down and leave. You know, that's basically what it is. Just get out. And of course, Marco Rubio, this is what really got me. Marco Rubio puts out a Twitter post, and in his Twitter post, he says, here is why Trump cares about Venezuela. I mean, it's almost a laughing stock to me. Here's why he cares about Venezuela. Mass migration is destabilizing Colombia, a key anti-drug partner. Bonnie, I spent 7 years working with this government and intelligence community there, and I can guarantee you one thing. Colombia is not an anti-drug partner. The only way they can say anti-drug partner is to crush all the competition of the drugs that are being smuggled in the U.S. that is backing all these politicians where they get their wallets fattened up. And of course, when he says Maduro is trafficking cocaine into the U.S., well maybe he is. I'm not going to say that Maduro is not, but the problem is these politicians are not getting their kickback for those drugs being trafficked in here. And of course, the U.S. is being cut off in the supply of money, and that limits the amount of money they have to be able to use to destabilize other nations. So yeah, that does become a problem for the United States at that point. And when Marco Rubio says this, of course, he's a Florida politician, and I can only go back and tell you that back in 1990, President George H.W. Bush put the stops to one of the most major investigations of our time against three particular power companies. Won't mention those names right now, but he had to do that because there were 30 Florida politicians involved and was alleged, I should say, alleged of illegal campaign contributions. Well, it actually was a money laundering scheme for all their dope money that they were trying to launder. And yeah, these politicians were getting their kickbacks as well. But these good old, a lot of them were Democrats. And of course, the good old Republican president comes in there and covers their behinds and stops the investigation so nobody else could find out anything about it. I happen to know about it because I worked for the CIA at the time. And yes, I did know several of those politicians, and I won't name their names here, but not a very pretty picture. So when Marco Rubio makes these accusations here, the one thing I can say is that it seems like the political elite establishment, along with the deep state that wages the wars around the world in order to prepare the world for their new world order, which will ultimately end up being not a capitalist system either. It will end up being a communistic neo-Nazi system when they're done with it. So I'm not in favor of it at all. And then, of course, Maduro, he also says Maduro has asked Putin to put a naval air base in our hemisphere. Now, that's about the only thing that I could side with President Trump on. No, as an American, I don't want a Russian military base sitting in our hemisphere either. And I do agree that that is not the most pleasant thing for us to have, Russian bombers sitting down just south of Cuba on a little island there with a new military base. And of course, that turns into the situation once again of the Cuban crisis that John F. Kennedy was facing. But then
don't they have a base in the, just off the Venezuelan coast? Remember, I don't know how long ago it was, 6 months ago maybe, we were watching all these military vessels down there.
Well, this is where they're wanting Russia to actually.
Right. And aren't there now many, many Russian ships already there?
There has been that has been stated that there are, and I would not be a bit surprised if they're not. I know there's conflicting issues as to whether or not Russia is going to try to rescue Maduro out of this situation. I have a feeling that what Russia will do is give him arms to try to help him to stop this. But, Bonnie, what I keep noticing is that President Putin seems to be more in line with New World Order thinking. Because if we go back into Syria and we see how his response was to Israel bombing Iranian targets in Syria, and we take that as a lesson learned, yes, he did help Bashar al-Assad. He did partner with Turkey. But again, what was it for? It is almost a power struggle between rivaling families in the world over who's going to get the economic blessing of the New World Order. So as Russia and his allies are battling to be able to put their gas pipelines through Syria, which they have successfully done so, at the same time, the United States, Israel, China, and China's on the backing of Israel in this case, are putting their pipelines through Syria as well. Now, China is a little bit more of a distant partner. I say that because they built the port in which will facilitate for the Silk Road Initiative. But the thing is, the point I'm making here is that, yeah, Russia's got their own interests there. But when it comes to stopping of a New World Order process, which is the toppling of certain nations and putting in power the people they want in power, he doesn't really seem to be on the side of his own allies. So in other words, in Iran, it's okay, bomb all their facilities there. We're not going to stop you. We're not worried about that. And yet everybody thinks from a biblical standpoint that Russia is the king of the north that is going to come against Israel. And it doesn't make sense. It just doesn't make sense to me. Turkey may be. In fact, that was really more of the land that was considered at that time of the threat against Israel. But Putin, unless they change leaders, is such an ally of Israel. And that's one thing that I always liked about him, because I felt like, okay, I don't have to worry about Russia attacking, even though most biblical people believe that it's going to be Russia that's going to attack. I was never worried about Putin coming against Israel. Granted, like any other Jewish believer, I would be concerned about Iran. But if Iran has been in Syria for the past 8 years, helping Syria to battle ISIS and the jihadists that are trying to overthrow Bashar al-Assad. And during that time, they've never tried to attack Israel. They've been more busy helping Syria. And yet at the same time, Israel's been attacking them. Getting close to 300 attacks have been made on them. Something is wrong with the picture. Somewhere, something's wrong.
Didn't you discuss, you know, previously that Netanyahu wants a lot of his people to be killed in a war?
Yes, that is true. And this is actually from the mouths of the believers, the Israeli believers that live in Israel. I've had this confirmed to me publicly by Simantov. Brother Richard, I won't call Brother Richard's last name because he asked me not to. He said that if his name was known before the Israeli government, they would take away his citizenship and throw him out of the country. And that is, they have all been telling me, and I have many other believing Israelis that'll tell you that they know it's coming, that Netanyahu is going to be the man. Before he leaves office, he is going to try to force Iran to attack Israel. And my thought is the reason why he wants to do this is to get the Israelis to go along with this new global agenda they have. If you'll notice, Donald Trump keeps pushing back his the unveiling of his two-state solution. And I find that kind of interesting. Why does he keep pushing it back? We know from the leaks that have been released in the Israeli media, I say Israeli media, so that way people might feel like it's more credible here, but the Israeli media has leaked recently that 90% of the West Bank go to the Palestinians and East Jerusalem will go to the Palestinians for their official state area. Now, but the other thing though, Bonnie, is that a lot of people are not aware of, and that is that the one purpose for this war is to get the people to accept the fact that Israel will become a borderless region. And this may be even where they call, some people call this the Zionist, Rothschild Zionist agenda, is to have from the Euphrates to the Nile River as part of the greater Israeli project. Now, I have a feeling now as I've been watching this stuff play out, this is not really the desire of the Israeli people, but it is a New World Order project is what it is. And unfortunately, many of the Christians in the world have fell into the trap of thinking this is truly good. But what it is they're going to make a tri-state. It's going to be the Saudis, the Egyptians, and Israel. And of course, encompassed in this tri-state, Jordan, and of course, I think parts of Syria will also become part of that region. This is why the war with Syria. This is why we see Turkey moving into the northern border and taking certain territories for themselves, because Erdogan was promised to be given a lot. As I was told years ago, this was probably back in 2015, Erdogan would be giving a great more in the New World Order. It was never defined to me at the time what that meant. And I kind of used to take it as a greater position. But from what I'm seeing now, he gets more land. And Syria, northern Syria, is going to be the lands that he is going to get, which is actually some of the most fertile part of the nation, because you're getting away from the desert area when you get into the northern parts of Syria. So, yes, Erdogan is getting a great benefit from this. And this is why we see, as the United States has helped to, they say they're toppling ISIS, but no, they've been basically making sure that Bashar al-Assad could not retake certain aspects of the country back, while Turkey moves into the position to take those places as part of the New World Order agenda.
Does that greater Israel concept include the new proposed city of Neom in Saudi Arabia, which is where the Almighty met Moses on the mountain?
Yes, it does. And that's what I don't, you know, that's another thing that I don't like. Are they going to destroy these places, or will they actually make this a tourist attraction?
I heard they were going to bulldoze it. I don't see how they can bulldoze that huge mountain that is blackened on the top, but...
It's hard to say. I was actually invited to go there, and I know that... The friends of mine that, going back to Ron's family, Ron Wyatt being the man that actually discovered this mountain, and I know that there's been many others been there since then, but I was actually invited, but I didn't have the financial means to do so at the time, to go to Saudi Arabia. And it's one of the princes of the Saudi kingdom that they had befriended that organized the trip over there. And I could have gone, which I really wanted to go, but you know, like I said there again, the economic cost to do so, I think it was like $10,000 I would have, and I just didn't have that kind of money at all. But wow. At any rate, that's what makes me wonder if they may not use certain areas as a destination point, especially for believers in this this part, because
that would be a great tourist attraction, with the altar below, with all the etched into the rock calves, bulls, the worships of Egypt, the worship symbol, all the pegs in the ground of the 12 tribes. That's amazing. I wish I could go there. You know, Hal Turner is saying that Russia last week sent 5 bombers to Venezuela. They were strategic bombers, 5 airplanes. Do you anticipate, is this a contest or a struggle, a tug of war between who is going to control the globalist empire, East or West, or Russia or Western bankers?
Yes. Well, here's the thing. This is what makes it very difficult to figure this all out. You have on both sides, both the United States and Russia, the economic backing is coming from the Jewish elite. And we know this because Putin and President Trump, on Trump's side, you have Jared Kushner, who comes from a very elite family, the tycoons of the big money and the real estate empires. And Russia, on Putin's side, he's got people which are mutual friends like Lev Leviev, the billionaire Diamond, who is dual citizen of Israel and of the former Soviet Union. And but the thing is, you know, is it a power struggle of who gets to control the economies of this region? And that's one thing why I see that, even though they know they're going to go to a new world order, they're not going to fight the new world order aspect, but they do fight for what's there. And of course, Venezuela is not just about the oil. They are the third largest gold reserve in the world. So, you know, everybody is vying for how much gold they can have. Russia is also, I think, the third largest gold holder in the world as well, surpassing China as a gold holder. And of course, the U.S. says that we have all this gold as like number one. But, you know, there's a lot of question as whether or not that's really true, because when Germany demanded their gold to be sent back to them, the U.S. Under Obama's administration said you'll have to wait for 10 years. Wait, you got to wait 10 years to get your own gold back that you have deposited in the treasury. And I forget the guy's name now, but he had spoke before the Senate subcommittee years ago. He was going to come on our channel, and it's actually my fault I didn't get him on. But he talked about then the reason why we don't have the gold is because we spent this money making all these underground places for the elite to be able to run to. And he said the U.S. had basically just spent all that gold reserves that we had on that very thing. And of course, I know that they say, I forget who, maybe it's somebody at the meeting there in Oregon that told me this, but they said that, or no, it was actually when we were in Denver, we had the little mini meeting there. There was a family there that told me that the amount of dirt that was moved out from under the Denver airport area when they were making this underground facility there was more in volume than when they built the Panama Canal. So just imagine the monstrosity of that. And of course, you know, the Germans built a tunnel digging machine. I think it's the Germans. I actually, when I was in France, they have one of the older tunnel boring machines, but this one was just monstrosity that they built. And it literally, I think they can go, I forget how many feet an hour this thing could actually just drill into the earth. And so they're making all these because they know what's coming.
And we'll pick it up on the other side. Thanks for staying with us.
Behold, I will make Jerusalem a cup of trembling unto all people round about, when they shall be in siege both against Judah and against Jerusalem. Are the days of Zechariah warned of upon us? Join Stephen Bannoun and host Bonnie Harvey for a discussion of Jerusalem, the Flashpoint.
Welcome, everyone, to the second half of Flashpoint here. I have a question. Stephen, you know, when I heard you talk at the conference about Zionism, how this really is, it's not the Zionism, the return of the tribes or, the preparation for when Torah goes forth out of Jerusalem. This is pretty much a new world order. And what it reminds me of is a caliphate. Now, do you see similarities between secular Zionism and the caliphate in that it's just power, power, power?
Well, I agree with that. And, you know, Bonnie, the thing is, I've always said to people, especially over the years, I said there's two types of Zionism. Maybe there's three, but there's really two. And because some people might declare, OK, I'm a Zionist, like Roger Stone, for example, recently he got arrested, allegedly for lying before Congress when he testified. And of course, he's making a bold stand that he's standing with President Trump, et cetera. But I was actually invited to a political rally in Florida here, not far from Orlando, and he was the keynote speaker. And so I got to meet and talk to him a little bit afterwards. And the one thing that really surprised me was he whispers to me, he says, "I'm a hardcore Zionist," he said, "and so is President Trump." And but you have to understand, I know that there's two types of Zionists. And when a political man is willing to whisper in my ear to where nobody else can hear about it that they're a hardcore Zionist, then I realize he's not talking about the Zionism that I would stand for, because, in all fairness, I have to say I used to be a Zionist more blindedly by I supported anything that the Israeli government did because I thought that they had the interest of our people at heart. But the two types of Zionism that there is one is a globalist Zionist agenda. And then we have the Zionism where it is the religious body of Jews or even believers in Yeshua that believe in returning to the homeland and that this is where biblical prophecy will be fulfilled. That's a good kind of Zionism, and there's nothing wrong with that. And a lot of times we get beat up because we're not there to go over there and overthrow all the different regions. We're just wanting to return back to what Moses had originally said that was given to our people years ago. Now, but we have to do that cautiously too, though, Bonnie, because years ago when Joshua and Caleb, when they were the two that, like the two witnesses, you might say, there were 10 spies. But they were the two that actually believed that we were more than able to take the land. But we were facing the Nephilim. We were facing the giants, the Anunnaki, the Hittites, the Perizzites, the Jebusites. All these different peoples had been inbred amongst the fallen angels and had created the Nephilim race. That's why there were giants in the land. And so when we took over this land, we were commanded to kill off all the inhabitants because they were not earthly. They were very demonic people that had gotten all this genealogy mixed up together. And but now we are, of course, that's been 3,400 years ago, roughly. And here we are now wanting to come back to our homeland again. But we're not faced with the Anunnaki. We're not faced with the Nephilim in the land. We have a lot of Arabic people that are living there. But we have to remember that our people were exiled as a result of our own sins, sins of my forefathers. And those sins were the crucifixion of Yeshua as the Mashiach. Although we know it had to happen, still, nonetheless, there was no repentance, and therefore we were exiled as a result of that. Now, Rambam would actually argue just the opposite and say that the reason we were exiled was according to the sins of Yeshua, and he cites that they are that Yeshua and his disciples were the fulfillment of Daniel 11:14, the violent among your people. She'll try to establish the vision. But there was no violence in Yeshua, so that's clearly a false conjecture to even make. But at this point, though, now we have literally a Zionist view that is to go into not only the state of Israel, but to recreate from the Euphrates River all the way to the Nile River, a greater Zionist project that is brought on by the elite Jews, and they don't care who they kill that's in the path. And we saw this clearly from many of the early Israeli leaders that came in, and which kind of makes me question, who are these people really, Bonnie? Because, you know, this is not the belief of Yeshua, and it's, you know, and we're not faced, you know, the people that were living in the land at this time now, these are, you know, I mean, to my opinion, they weren't Nephilim per se. I mean, not to say there couldn't have been already Nephilim living in the area, but it almost makes you wonder if it's not the Nephilim trying to conquer the people of the land. You know, and here's the thing, and to my argument of this, I would also state, biblically, the house of Judah was to return first. And we were seeing this long before 1948, in the 1800s under the Ottoman Empire. The Ottoman Empire at that time had given permission to the Jewish people to begin to return and purchase lands inside of what we call the modern state of Israel. And they had actually purchased large tracts of land. In fact, the Rothschilds themselves went and purchased all the land of Jerusalem. So they took advantage of that as well. But many of the Sephardic Jews also from Yemen and Iraq and Iran and those different regions of the world were coming in and buying land in Tel Aviv and up towards Haifa. And the only reason the Ottoman Empire permitted this to be done was because they wanted somebody to pay the taxes, and the peasants didn't have the money to. And it was a very sparsely populated land. There wasn't a lot of people living there at the time. And this would have been the better way to go about it. And as you buy your land, then you could take and eventually incorporate and put together, you know, more of a godly government. And that would have been much better. But instead, and I will say this, even though the way that it was brought about to make the state of Israel, it still fulfills biblical prophecy. Even though a lot of people say, well, the Rothschilds are what created the state of Israel. Partially, yes. Not fully, though. Because even though they were blocking the Jews from being able to make Aliyah because they wanted certain people in power, and I know this for a fact. I'm not saying this because I read it off of some website. The Bielski family, Tuvia Bielski, which they make the movie Defiance. And if you have never seen the movie Defiance, watch it. It's on Netflix. It's made about Tuvia Bielski, Asoil, and Asus, his brothers. They rescued 1,200 Jews during the Holocaust. And Michael Bielski, who is the son of the leader, which was Tuvia Bielski in the movie here, is like one of my most closest friends of all. And Michael, we have spent many hours privately, whether he's in my house or I'd be in his place, talking about the things in the creation of the state of Israel, because his father lived there after the Second World War. He migrated to Israel, where Mickey was born. And he told me about how that they tried to get his father, because he was a military commander, so to speak, in fighting with the Russian partisans against the Nazis during the war in Belarus, where he rescued him and his brothers, 1,200 of their own people. But Tuvia did not discriminate whether you were old or young or infirmed. He loved the Jewish people and he rescued his people. So when he went to Israel and they were creating the state of Israel before the 48 war, they approached him. One of the elite families approached him to be a commander in the army for the revolution. But what it entailed is that they were going to be the ones in power, and that if any other Jewish factions that were fighting in this, which at the time was the Menachem Begin group, which was the Erdogan gang, kill them.
I think that they some of the things that come out of it once Jerusalem. These
because the other group, which was under at the time Ben Gurion, we had Rabin, Yitzhak Rabin was involved with that, and also the second prime minister of Israel was involved in that as well. But they had made the covenant with Rome that they would get a state, but Jerusalem was hands off. Menachem Begin's group, the Erdogan gang, was the opposite way. Now, neither one of the groups were really good to start with, but the Ben Gurion's group was the ones that approached Tuvia Bielski, and he was to guard the road going up to Jerusalem and to kill anyone, including Jews, that were to dare try to take this. This is why we saw the sinking of the ship, the Altalina, that Menachem Begin had brought in, fully equipped with soldiers, tanks, and everything to be able to take Jerusalem. That's what he wanted to do, was liberate Jerusalem. And Mickey Bielski said to me, he says, my father said, there is no way. He said, you're asking me to kill my own people? He said, I just spent the last 5 years of my life rescuing every Jew I possibly could. He said, and there is no way I will start today and killing my own people for the sake of us building a nation. And these are things that I know for a fact, and that's why I know what the intention was. And this is why also there were only certain families they wanted to get in to begin with in the state of Israel, and why so many Jews were allowed to go to the gas chamber, so that they would not get too many of the religious Jews that would not be on their side. And but nonetheless,
and that's exactly who in an upcoming war that Netanyahu would like purge from the population now, especially the Yeshua believing Jews.
Absolutely. Well, actually, the war that would be coming up, you have to understand, there's one group that is through the Shas party. The Shas party is the one that is part of the coalition of Netanyahu's party to begin with. And the Shas party is made up of the Chabad organization of Jews. Now, I was a member of this for more than 30 years. And so I know a lot about the inside workings of the Chabad organization as well. Not at the top ranks, but just from even from very wealthy Jews. I know this because I know the things that would be said in our private circles. But the thing is, Obani, is that what they want to do is the other Orthodox Jews that are there that are not pro go out there and kill all of your neighbors. They're the ones that make the fuss about why are we attacking Syria, including American Jews as well that do that. These are the ones they would like to thin out, and not just them, but just secular Jews as well that are they love their neighbors. They're not, you know, they don't want war with Palestinians, because you have to understand, even amongst Palestinians and as Gazans as well, you're maybe 10% of your population is where the problem is. That's where the animosity is stirred up. And Barry Chomish has written many times how that the Israeli government would take Sephardic Jews, dress them as Palestinians, and go in there and start riots to get the rest of them riled up to fight back too. It's crazy what's going on, but they're doing this because they want a war. They want to thin them out. And according to the believers that are there now, that they've been writing, talking by phone, talking by Skype, they've told us privately, Steve, they're going to start a persecution against us, because once the war happens, they're going to put in full force the Noahide laws globally. They're going to put the Sanhedrin in power, and they're eventually going to do away with the United Nations. And that's how the New World Order will be set up.
When this war does start, are many of these people in a certain geographical location where they could be targeted in certain neighborhoods? Or is it like here, you know, they have your URL, they have all what you've been saying, doing, posting, you know, whatever, for the last, 15, 20 years? So then personally go after you with drones? Or how do you...
Well, here's one thing you got to think about. There are some demographic issues to this, and a lot of people are not really aware of that. It wasn't that we actually explored it from a demographic standpoint. But for example, Russian Jews that come in that migrate and do Aliyah are normally put in the most hostile environments, and they're normally put on settlements within the West Bank. Now, oddly enough, if we look at what Trump's leaked plan does, these are the people that will be targeted. And in a war itself, naturally, they're going to be the first ones to die, especially if we find out that the Palestinians, you know, because the Palestinians have been fighting with Iranians and Hezbollah, and also they're moved into northern areas. Generally, the undesirable Jews are always placed in the border regions and the areas where if you come in, if you have any type of a war, they will suffer the most losses.
I perceive that the Russian immigrants are not particular believers. They're more secular?
Yes, they are. In most cases, Russian Jews are more secular.
And they're violent.
Well, not necessarily. Violent, but the thing, they do have their own mafia connections. I mean, that is true. There are mafia connections in that as well. It's just like it is back in Russia. The only reason they came to Israel was to escape the communism. And quite frankly, that's why they did it. But then again, you've got people like Lev Levayev. Lev Levayev was born in the former Soviet Union. He is a billionaire. He came to Israel as an immigrant boy. He was put to work in a diamond shop where he rose to a place to where he could learn all the different cutting techniques, and then rose to power, started his own business. And the next thing you know, he becomes a billionaire and breaks the the Ashkenazi control of the world diamonds. And of course, that's where your blood diamonds come from. But again, it's mafia connections through Russia. So there's just global fighting for power right now, Bonnie.
What about the Sephardic Jews? Are they at a certain, I know that they're from previous discussions with you, the Sephardic Jews are, they're probably the more religious Jews.
Well, your Sephardis, we have a lot of our Sephardis too that would consider themselves Orthodox, but they don't go around with a black coat, black hat, etc. But we do have that type as well. But your Sephardis, of course, from different places. Northern Africa is where my family's from Morocco, but you have many of them from Yemen, Iran, places like that. And they are very undesired by the Ashkenazi elite that control the government. I mean, it's not to say that we don't have one or two in power. There are. We have many that are war heroes.
Because they're not, as a group, they're not globalists?
Well, that would be true as well. And also because all the crimes that were committed against them when they first came in. I mean, we have also the issue of over 2,000 Sephardi babies that went missing when they first migrated from Yemen. They're called the Yemenite babies. What happened to the Yemenite babies? And of course, the Netanyahu, under his own administration, has been trying to deal with this. But, they're never going to tell the people the truth what happened to them. And also the ringworm children under Shimon Peres, when he was having school children go out to be tested for, as they said, for ringworm, I forget what it was he was wanting to do it. But they were giving them 100 times a maximum dose of radiation because Shimon Peres made an agreement with the American government to get a nuclear power plant to be able to create a nuclear bomb if he would do this study. And of course, not the Ashkenazi kids, only the Sephardic kids. The study shouldn't have been done, period. You know, I mean, why can't we trust the Almighty himself to protect Israel? I realize we have to have a military, but my point is that instead of trusting the God of Israel that made us to start with, who brought us as a people back to our own land, who can do more than any military there is in the world, instead of praying, fasting, and trusting in him, it's just the opposite.
Only after Ezekiel 38:39, and then because 39 ends with, and then everyone in Israel will know Jehovah.
Yes. Bonnie. Yeah. One thing. Let me just say real quick before I forget this, and I know it's completely off subject. I did load one. I loaded one part message from the conference. I will be loading more, but I got the one up today where I think it's, and I need to get with LA to make sure it's okay with him. We're going to load up some of his on Israeli News Live as well during the week. I don't have everything exactly right because playing cameraman and a few other coats there, sometimes I forget to get the camera just right or I'd make a mistake. But I loaded part of the one that I did up on the Nephilim on our channel. It's funny, though. People say, oh, my gosh, he's fat. He drinks beer. No, I've never drank in my life, actually. But I have a major allergy to gluten and to dairy. And I come to America with all the GMO and get fat. I gain 20 pounds when I come back here. So, no, for those that might, if you watch and think Steve drinks beer, never in his life. So,
are you drinking in the video?
No. This
because I see your tummy.
I don't gain weight in my arms or my legs. It only goes to the middle. But you know, Bonnie, what's funny, in Europe, I eat exactly the same way. My wife says, all right, I do have one Coke a day. Bonnie knows this because Bonnie would see my wife get on to me. And
we bought it for you. We went to the grocery store and bought it.
yes. Thank you. But yeah, sugar doesn't like me either. And I do need to stop. I realize that. But the bad thing is when my wife got me to stop one time before, I got super skinny, but I still had a little bit of a stomach because I can't. Yeah. The big problem
is just where you carry it. It's the same with my husband. He carries it there. I don't know.
I'd have to be a vegan is what I would have to be. Yeah. And I really don't want to be a vegan, but maybe it would be better for me because my body just does not do well. So at any rate, so where are we at now?
Well, I think we've exhausted Israel and we have 4 minutes to go. And with the whole 4 minutes, we can go to the Ukraine. Syria, Israel. That's where we're going. We're going to Syria, Israel.
What we're dealing with Syria and Israel right now is we've got, there is more and more things going on. Israel is working. There's an article that came out on the nationalinterest.org, and it's entitled Israel Kamikaze Drones Are Destroying Syria's Air Defenses, which that kind of reminds me of a scripture, how that the bars of Syria would be destroyed. And I've always believed that that would be a scripture that would be implying that it's the air defenses of Syria. And even though that we know it, like in according to Isaiah 17, Damascus is going to be destroyed. There's no way around it. You know, God is still, he's not happy with the fact that it happens, because he says it's the fortress of Ephraim. And Ephraim are the believing house of Israel that first believe, or part, you know, remnants of them. Not, of course, the house of Israel was scattered throughout all the world. But we have many of them that believe that Yeshua was the Messiah. And of course, they are still there to this day. But it, as there is, regardless, though, what's going on right now is that Israel, in targeting the Iranians that are inside of Syria, they are also targeting the Syrian air defenses. And they're, and what they're doing is they're willing to allow their drones to be totally taken out in order to do so. So they call them kamikaze drones is what they're actually calling them. And they're, it's, you know, any time that the Syrians launch a rocket at Israeli warplanes that are targeting the Iranians inside their borders, they're, again, attacking the drone. They're using drones so they don't take a chance of losing their men, but taking out those anti-missile defense systems that Syria is using. But I will say one thing, though, Bonnie, that I suggested on Israeli News Live that would probably be a better defense for Israel as well as for the Syrian population, because inadvertently, every time we seem to target the Iranians inside of Syria, we're getting civilians killed, we're getting Syrian military people killed, and this is only raising the tensions. But the Israelis continue to bring out that they monitor the planes, what is being loaded on the planes in Iran, and then those planes being flown to Damascus or even Lebanon. And my thought is if we have, and I know that the Israelis have that type of good technology to know what's going on in these planes, why are we waiting until they unload it to take the plane out? There is so much desert land over Syria that Israel could easily target these planes and take the planes out. Iran will get the message, quit sending planes over with any kind of weapons to start with then. And then at the same time, we would lower the risk of, you know, Syrian soldiers that are not fighting against Israel. We would lower the deaths of civilians that are being killed as a result of these strikes that are happening inside of Syria. And yet at the same time, it would give the protection to Israel and the security of knowing that Hezbollah is not getting all this weaponry that's going to be used on our northern border, which, by the way, we're going to take. Lebanon is going down next. I should say that. Have we exhausted the time? And don't forget to turn your mic on, Bonnie.
There we go. Yeah, we have 20 seconds. We actually could go for about a minute and 20. Tell us about the 70 seats that are going in and the Sanhedrin.
Yes. Wow. That's, you know, that's the big thing right now. You know, if you've ever been on a Western Wall tour, and I'll sum it up real quick, on a Western Wall tour, when you go down, I've not been there as far as a tour.
I have. It is amazing. You go down there and you see the pre-Herodian stones. You see the stones of Solomon.
Well, if you get there and you're looking at that one massive stone, they say there's no way possible for any way to this to be moved by normal human beings. And then you see the ones of the glass floor, all the temple stones that are twisted and toppled. As Yeshua said, not one stone would be left upon another. Buildings, not the Temple Mount, but the buildings are thrown down. And he even says thrown down. But in that one area, there's a really high, before it gets to the ceiling there, where you're looking at that one stone, they built a platform there, Bonnie. And when they built that platform, they're calling this in one video here, it's called the Hidden Temple for 70 elders dedicated on Hanukkah. Now, this particular area, I believe, is going to be used for the Sanhedrin's meetings, and I think it's going to be part of a New World Order. They have an altar there. They have a huge pomegranate with Hebrew writing on it. They have 24 seats for the 24 elders. They have this glass floor, as in the video the guy says. It's kind of like the sea of glass if you're looking at some of the prophecies in the Bible. I don't know if that's the case or not. I'm just saying some of the things that he mentioned there. But that fact that it's the 70 seats for the elders, and we know that the New World Order and how that everything is going to go forth from Jerusalem in their mimicked version of it. It's not the way that Yeshua would run it, but in their mimicked version of it. This is not good. It's definitely not good, because we're going to see an enforcement of Noahide laws. And that's why we're seeing the toppling of all these nations around the world.
And the Noahide laws, in summary, in a very brief summary, I mean, what's so bad with Noahide laws? They say it's the scripture, sounds good. What is bad with it, Stephen?
Well, they look like the Ten Commandments, but of course we're lacking three, right? But when it comes to the part about idolatry, it's the interpretation, because these laws are directly out of the Talmud. And according to the Chabad organization, that means if you believe that Yeshua is deity, off with your head. If you want to lower him, like John Hagee recently did and said he was not the Messiah, never claimed to be the Messiah, you'll be okay, and the Noahide laws will not cause you to lose your head.
That's it. That's the beheadings of Revelation. The Muslims, the Jews, I think, are going to join with the Catholics in a new world religion, and it's going to be an amalgamation governed by Noahide laws. Yeshua believers are dead. And if you can't prove Yeshua's deity, is going to be the most hot topic. So learn to prove the deity of Yeshua from the Old Testament, the Tanakh. Okay, with that, thanks so much, folks, for joining us, and we shall see you next week. Thank you so much, Stephen.
Thank you.